And we're holding the last words of Nirnala from Adbeys. We learned yesterday about, we were learning all about the dinim of when a bas koyin gets sreifa. And the last thing we learned about is that within that, there's a machlokas Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva. We said we had the opinion of the Chachamim, which also includes Rabbi Akiva, that the bas koyin who gets sreifa is well. So we had the opinion of the Chachamim that the bas koyin who gets sreifa is strictly when she's an arusa, when she's a nesua, or sorry, yeah, actually according to the Chachamim, only strictly when she's a nesua, not when she's an arusa, because an arusa is already on the hook for skila, and we're not going to downgrade her to sreifa. Then we had Reb Shimon, which Reb Akiva is following the same principle as well, that it's both an arusa and a nesua. And then we had Rabbi, and then we had Rabbi Shmuel, who said it's only an arusa, which he learned from, which he learned from he said he had a binyan av for that. He said the same way as the exception among a bas yisrael was strictly by an arusa, where ordinarily she'd get chenek, but when does she get skila? When she's a when she's a naira marosa. The same thing with a koyin, the exception that she's going to get sreifa is when she's a naira marosa. Okay, so now we said though, in the course of that, we said that Rabbi Shmuel is not darshaning the Gzeira Shava from the word Aviha. We said Rabbi Akiva is using that Gzeira Shava to teach us that it applies to a Nesua, to learn that it applies to a Nesua as well. To be exact, what we said is the Gzeira Shava tells us that it shouldn't include a Pnuya, that it won't include a girl who's not married yet. So now Rabbi Shmuel didn't use that Gzeira Shava because instead he had his Binyan Av. So the question is, Rabbi Shmuel, so the question is, bottom of Nunala from a base, Rabbi Shmuel, Hai Asaviyah, Hi Mechalalis, my Dorish base. So what is Rabbi Shmuel darshaning from those words in the Pasuk, Asaviyah, Hi Mechalalis, that she's desecrating her father? So again, Rabbi Akiva had used the Aviha for his Gzeira Shava, but Rabbi Shmuel, who doesn't accept that Gzeira Shava, what is he doing with that? The answer is Miboyle l'chidatanya. He uses it to teach us what we learn in the following braisa. Hoyer Rab Meir Omer. Rab Meir used to say, Ma tamad loymer es aviyah hi mechalelas. What does this pasuk mean? She's desecrating her father. She'im hoyer noyegin boi kodesh. If until now they were treating her father with kedusha, noyegin boi chol. Then now, because his daughter acted in this way, now they act him, now they treat him in a mundane way. They don't give him the special kedusha of a kohen. Covered, and if until now they were giving him covered, noyegin by bizoyin, then now they're treating him with bizoyin. The omrim, and the omrim they say on the omrim they say on him, oro shezu yolad, oro shezu gidol. Cursed is cursed is he that he fathered such a daughter, and that he raised such a daughter. Oro sheyotzeh zemechalotzev. Cursed is a person that such a daughter came out from his loins, meaning that was descended from him. So in other words, we put him down for that. That's aviyah hi. It bounces back. It's not just on her. It bounces back on her father as well, and causes him to be degraded. So one point is now the Mordechai discusses over here a number of details about that. First of all, so in general, we know that a kohen is supposed to be treated with a kedusha. You give him the first aliyah. When it comes to a meal, you give him precedence as far as being as far as leading the mezuman, etc. One thing is, the Mordechai brings in an interesting point over here that in the same way, then if you have a kohen whose daughter shmadzich rachmanu litzlan or committed znus, as we've been saying throughout the sugya, then he can't duchen. Now, not everybody agrees to that. Not everybody agrees to that. The Rebbe, when he brings it in Shulchan Aruch, points out that yes, the Ramah brings that halacha in the name of the Mordechai, but he says that nowadays we're not noyig in that, and we say that yes, of course, it's a tremendous degradation for the father, but that's not a reason to that's not a reason to block him from doing Birkas Kohanim, and certainly not if she was doing other averus. In any case, there is some discussion. There is some discussion about this that the Torah Tmimah discusses. First of all, why the double expression that if they were giving him that for why the double expression of kodesh and covered and chol and bizoyin, and then what do you mean if they were giving him this kedusha, aren't you required to? So the Torah Tmimah explains that there can be a difference. The kohen was an ama oretz, so you just have the mitzvah of giving him honor because of his kahuna. Now we're saying you don't give him that honor, and then if you also gave him him if you also gave him respect because of the Talmud Chacham, then also he gets downgraded because of that. In any case, Rabbi Shmuel is learning for that, is learning that from this pasuk, and saying therefore that that would mean that, that's what it means, that it actually has an effect on his status as a kohen as well. And the Gemara points out, Omer Ravashi, Keman Karinin Rashiya Bar Rashiya, whom are we following when we call a Rosha, when we call him Rosha, son of a Rosha? Now his father was not necessarily a Rosha. So how are we calling him a son of a Rosha? Keman Kahai Tana, that would be like the Tana of this Braisa, that we see that they were cursing the father, even though he himself didn't do anything wrong, just because of what his daughter did. So in the same way, we see that that calling someone a Rosha Ben Rosha is in the same kind of thing. In Shulchan Aruch, it mentions along similar lines, if one person calls another one a Mamzer, later on he needs to ask him Mechila for calling him such a name, but he wouldn't necessarily have to ask Mechila from the guy's father as well. He was insulting the father as well by saying that, if, after all, if you're saying the son is a mamzer, means that the father or the mother was mezana. Nevertheless, though, we're not worried about that based on our Gemara over here. But if he calls him mamzer, ben mamzer, then that's different. Then it means he's outright saying that the father was a mamzer, and for that he would have to ask mechila from the father as well. The Mishnah had said, "Zu mitzvah saniskolin." The Mishnah had said, "This is the mitzvah of the niskolin." So the Gemara asks, "My Tana, dekatani zu mitzvah saniskolin." What did it say previously? That was saying this is the mitzvah of the niskolin. The Mishnah was talking about the dalad mitzvahs based in and the order of them. Skila sreifa hereg chenek, according to the Chachamim. Sreifa skila cherek chenek hereg, according to Reb Shimon. Where does zu mitzvah saniskolin come in over here? So the answer is mishum de tana nigmar adin mitzi noisil soikoi, because in the previous parak we had learned that when the din was finished, when they judged him guilty, then they take him out to give him skila, and we described all the details. Beis haskila hoya gavoya shtei komas, and that the beis haskila was two stories high, and we went through all of that. It was two person heights high, and we went through all of that. Va'aydi de katoni l'misna mitzvah sanisrofin. Since the next mission now is going to start telling us the details of how we do seifa taninami zumitz v'saniskolin, so therefore our Mishnah finished off by saying this, meaning that what we learned in the previous perek is the mitzvah of the niskolin. Okay, so indeed mitzvah sanisrofin. So now, what's the mitzvah of how we do seifa? They have him. They sink him in dung, in animal waste, until his knees. Now, the reason for that is, why do they do that? Rashi explains, because the next part of the procedure, we're going to be putting a scarf around his neck to force him to open his mouth. We're going to be pouring hot lead down his throat. We want to make sure that he's not going to move around, and then the hot lead will end up falling on his skin, and that defeats the purpose. The whole point of it is for it to go down his throat. Now that's according to Rashi. The Yad Rama points out a number of problems with that, If that's the case, then why only until his knees? He can still move his upper body. And we find the same thing is done by Chenek as well. And there you don't have any issue of that anything might land on his skin. So the Yad Rama gives a different explanation. He says that a person is being executed. Sometimes he might void his bowels involuntarily. He might from the fear or whatever. He might soil himself. So that now we don't want the Shluchei Beis Din, or rather the Edim who are doing the punishment. We don't want them to get unnecessarily dirty. So this way he's in a pile of waste anyway, and this way if he's going to produce any of his own, then it'll get mixed in with it, or at least we'll know in which direction it's coming, and then therefore they'll know to stay away from that. And then the different Rishonim and Achronim talk about different answers. One thing is the Lechem Mishnah mentions that, the question is, why do we do that by Chenek as well? Because in many ways, what we do by Chenek is similar to what we do by Sreifa, as we're going to discuss later on. The difference is by Chenek, of course, there's no hot lead, but still, once we use a certain method by Sreifa, then we use it by Chenek as well. And the Teferes Yisrael also points out that, look, it's part of his punishment as well. Part of his bizoyan is that he's in a pile of waste over there. Anyway, continues the Mishnah. The noisin sudar kosher l'seicharaka. They take a hard a hard scarf and they put it inside a soft one. The point being, in other words, you don't just want to use a hard scarf, a scratchy one, for example, to put around his throat to force him to open his mouth, because that one it's gonna scrape up his skin, and that would be that's not part of his punishment. He's supposed to be getting safer, not that. On the other hand, we can't use just a soft one, because then that won't force him to open his mouth. So therefore, we need both. Therefore, we need one inside the other. Here also, the Yad Ramah has a different idea about it, that a soft one would rip too easily. In any case. So we do that. We put a hard scarf, one with a tight, scratchy weave or whatever, one which is hard enough to stand up to the pulling, inside a soft one, so that it doesn't scrape up his skin. The korach al tzavora, they tie it around as they put it around his neck. Zem moshech etzle v'zem moshech etzle. Each one of the two edim pulls in a different direction, which forces him ad shepaseach es piv, until the guy opens his mouth involuntarily to breathe. At that point, umad the kasapsila, then they light the wick, which is, in other words, the wick being a long skinny piece of lead. They heat it up so that so it's molten. The zirkal piv, and they throw it into the guy's mouth. The and it goes down his throat into his stomach. The and it burns up his insides, and that's he dies from that. As we're going to learn in the Gemara, where do we learn such a concept? Where do we learn such a concept of burning? We're going to see in the Gemara. Now, that's the Tanna Kamma. Rabbi Yehuda points out there's a problem with that. You're going to force his mouth open with this, with these two scarves wrapped around one another. The problem is, afhu mes biyadim. The problem is, what if he ends up dying through them? What if they pull too hard on the scarf and they end up strangling him? Lo makayim by mitzvah sreifa. Then they haven't accomplished the mitzvah of sreifa. He's supposed to be getting sreifa, not chenek. Ella, rather, Rabbi Yehuda learns, they open up his mouth with pliers or forceps or something like that against his will. And that so not in a way where it could possibly strangle him, but just they force his mouth open using some kind of tool like that. And then umadlikasapsilavazokalasevpiv, and then at that point they light they start melting the wick and put it into his mouth, and it goes into his stomach and burns him from the inside. Why is Rabbi Yehuda repeating the whole last part of it? So one thing is, the Shoshanim LeDavid points out that Rabbi Yehuda wants to say that, listen, not only does this help as far as that you won't accidentally strangle the guy, but according to you, Tanakama, when are you going to start preparing this wick? You want it to be as hot as possible, but meanwhile, actually, if you do it before you start opening, before you start forcing his mouth open, by the time you get it open, by the time you get him to the point where he opens his mouth, then it may have cooled off, and while they're pulling on the scarf, their hands are busy with that, and they can't be lighting it. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda is saying, my way is better, because that way you're able to that way you don't need two people to open his mouth, and that way one of them can be busy preparing the lead. Nonetheless, the halacha is like the Tanna Kamma, that we do it this way with the two scarves and all that. The Mishnah continues. Amar Rabbi Elazar ben Tzaddik, or Reb Tzaddik, it's supposed to be. Maaseh b'bas kohen achas. It happened once with a certain bas kohen, which, as we've been learning the last couple of dafim, is going to get sreifa when she was mezana. Shezinsa, where she was mezana in a way that would make a chayiv sreifa. And they surrounded her with bundles of branches for sarfua, and they burnt her. So Rabbi Elazar ben Tzaddik is saying that that seems to be. What are you telling me? This whole business with hot lead and all that. The correct way to do sreifa is to burn the guy at the stake. Omruloi, the Chum answered him, no. The Beistin of that time was not expert in the dinim of Torah, meaning they were tzedukim. They didn't hold of all these gzeira shavas and all the gzeira shava that we're going to learn now in the Gemara of how we know how sreifa is supposed to be done. They're tzedukim. They don't hold of Torah Shabbat Peh. So therefore, they took it at face value. The Torah says burn them with fire. Therefore, they burnt her with fire, but in fact, they didn't know what they were doing. Historically, we find there were some times when the Tzedukim were able to even take over the Sanhedrin, or to infiltrate themselves into it, or to set up so-called Sanhedrins of their own. So the Chum are telling Rabbi Elazar ben Tzaddik, that's what happened. That's the story that you're reporting. But not that we learned from that's actually how Sreifa is supposed to be done. Okay. So the Gemara says, "My psila." When we say, first of all, in the Mishnah, we mention a wick. What do we mean by a wick? And the answer is Amar Amasta Psila Shel Avar. It means a wick, like a long, skinny piece of lead, or of lead, or some similar, or some similar metal like that, which they melt, which they melt, and then they pour down his, and then they pour down his throat. So the Gemara says, Manolon, where do we get such a thing? Where do we get that kind of method for Srefa? And the answer is, Asya Srefa Srefa Me'adas Korach. We make a Gzeira Shava on the word Srefa from what happened to the gang with Korach. So you have, we know with Korach, there were two different groups over there. There were the ones who got swallowed in the ground, Dothan and Aviram and their families. And then there were the ones that would bring the 250 men who brought the Ketores, where they were burnt up. So we're going to learn, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, that they were burnt in this way from the inside without their bodies being burnt. Mala halan srefas neshama v'guf kayim, just like over there, their neshamas were burnt, meaning, in other words, that their insides were burnt, but their guf on the outside stayed intact, which we don't know that yet. The Gemara is going to explain soon how we know that. Afkan srefas neshama v'guf kayim, the same way the missas basin of srefa involves burning their inside but not their outside. So therefore, it can't be burning at the stake, as Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Tzadik had said. It has to be an internal burning, which is how we do it over here. So the Gemara continues. Rabbi Elazar says, I have a different limud. I agree there's a Gzeira Shava, but we learn the Gzeira Shava not from Adas Korach, but Asya Srefa Srefa mi Bnei Aaron. We learn it actually from the sons of Aaron, from Nadab and Avihu, where they brought Esh Zara and they were burnt. And they're also, Malahalan Srefas Neshama v'guf kayim, Afkan Srefas Neshama v'guf kayim. They were burnt on the inside and their outsides remained intact. Okay, so the Gemara says, "Man diyalef me adas korach manole." Well, the opinion that says we learn from adas korach, where indeed do we know that they were burnt only on the inside? And the answer is dichtiv es mach the es machtas achatoyim eila b'nafshoisam. The pasuk says afterwards, Hashem tells Moshe to tell Elazar to gather up the pans. These 250 people, they had all brought ketores. They all had a pan of their own in which they put coals, and then they burnt the ketores on it. And Hashem tells Moshe to tell Elazar to gather up all those pans and beat them out into a copper plating that will be used to plate the mizbeach on the choshes, the mizbeach hachitzin, and that'll be a sign for everybody to always remember to never store it up and fight over the kahuna. Anyway, the pasuk uses the expression the es machta. It doesn't. There's no vav in the pasuk, but whatever. Es machta sachatoyim ela benaf shoysam. These pans of these people who sinned with their souls. So what do you mean with their souls? Nishmas and nisrefas. It means their souls, their insides were burnt for guf kayim, but their guf remained intact. So therefore, the Tanakhama is saying that you can learn a gzeira shava from that to srefa, to the punishment of srefa. The Idach, what does Rabbi Elazar say to that? He says, Hahi Srefa Mamashi. He says, no, when it comes to Adas Korach, it was actually, they were literally burnt. They were actually burnt to a crisp. And my benaf shoysam, according to him, what does the word benaf shoysam mean? Shenischayu srefa al iske naf shoysam. They became chayv srefa. What led to that is something that involved their nefesh. Namely, in other words, they ate and drank, and eating and drinking benefits the nefesh, benefits the soul. And they ended up, what caused them to go astray and to wind up in this situation where they brought ketores where they weren't supposed to, and they ended up getting burnt. So Rabbi Elazar learns that they actually got literally burnt, and benaf shoysim doesn't mean only their insides, it means that they benefited from Korach's food and drink. He wined and dined them, as we're going to go on to say now, and that's what led them down the wrong path and eventually brought them to this. But not to learn from that how they were actually punished. In fact, they were punished by being completely burnt up. So he learns, therefore, this expression, Benaf Shoysam, teaches us like what Rish Lakish said. Do Amar Rish Lakish, my dichtiv, what does it mean, a posik and tilling, b'chanfe lage moig, through the, with the chanfe, the chanufa, the flattery of lage, of those who mock moig, with food. Rashi points out the word moig it's related to the word uga, which means a cake. And we find that in a different context that moig means something like that. It means like a cake or like food or whatever. And the pasuk continues, chorek alai shinemai, they're gnashing their teeth, they're gritting their teeth about me. So, in the simple sense, the pasuk is saying something like this: that David is complaining to Hashem about his enemies, where they act in this hypocritical way. B'chanfei, they act in this letzonistic way. That yeah, moig means eating and drinking. So Rashi explains in context, they're talking about Sheol, that they're trying to ingratiate themselves with Sheol so he'll give them food, and then they're going and massering on me and gnashing their teeth against me. Like, how are we going to be able to get him? But here the Gemara is explaining, and then different other Mefarshim on the Pasuk have different explanations of what it means exactly. B'chanfei can mean they themselves are chanefim, they themselves are acting in hypocritical ways. In any case, the point is that the point is here the Gemara is darshining it about Adas Korach. Because of this flattery that they were flattering Korach and joining his group and telling him what you're doing is good. And why did they do that? Al iske legima, because of matters involving food. He was treating them to food and drink, and therefore that made them want to be closer to him and go along with whatever he does, with whatever he says. Because of that, the Malach of Gehenna was gritting his teeth against them and saying, I'm going to get them, I'm going to burn them with my fire of Gehenna that I'm in charge of. So therefore, so Rebbe Elazar says, so you see, by darshining that they were actually completely burnt, there's no reason to say that it was only Sreifas Neshama, like the Tanna Kamma says. Therefore, we can't learn from, so now, why indeed don't we learn from there? Then we'll get back to that. But in any case, so therefore, Rebbe Elazar says, if you're going to learn that it means Sveifas Neshama, you can't learn it from them. You have to learn it from Nadav and Avihu instead. Okay, so the Gemara says, Man diyalef b'nei Aaron minole. Well, Rebbe Elazar then, who is learning from b'nei Aaron, where does he know that their death was Sveifas Neshama of a guf kayam? And the answer is dichtiv, because the pasuk is vayamusu lifnei Hashem. It says they died before Hashem. Which implies ke'ein misa, meaning the fact that it says vayamusu, they died. Now, if they were burnt up, there's no reason to say they died. What it means is that they died in a way it was like a natural death. A natural death, a person dies and their body is still intact. So therefore, so we learn from that that we learn from that 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 here also their body was intact and only their insides were burnt out. Well, the Edoch, so what is the Tanna Kamma answer to that? So he says, how no, on the contrary, Yahu Sreifa Mamash Havoi, no, you look, you Rebbe Elazar are telling me that what I'm saying, the Tanna Kamma, the Adas Korach, they weren't burnt from the inside, they were burnt completely. And you're saying that Bnei Aaron were burnt only on the inside. I'm saying the opposite, that no, by Bnei Aaron, we can instead learn that they were completely burnt. What does it mean? And they died. It means the aschavahumigavoy. It started on the inside. Kein misa. It started when they were killed. It started the way that a regular misa is. That namely, that the person the neshama leaves him. But then, in fact, it went on to burn their bodies as well. The Tanya, as we learn in a Brisa, Abba Yosef ben Destoyomer, Shnei Chutin Shel Eish, Yotzim Beis Kodesh HaKadoshim, two threads of fire came out from the Kodesh HaKadoshim, because after all, they had brought a fire they weren't supposed to, Eish Zara. So therefore, instead, so therefore, midah keneged midah, now fire came out of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the Nechlaku La'arba, and these two threads of fire divided into four. For each one of them, two of these sub-strings of fire went into their nostrils, the seraphim, and burnt them. And then afterwards, now the Tanna Kamma of our Braisa is saying that after doing that, after killing them by going on the inside, similar to the lead of our Mishnah, afterwards it continued to burn their outsides as well. Whereas according to Rebbe Elazar, we're saying it stopped there and their bodies remained intact. Marsha, in fact, points out that it means, in other words, so basically we have two different opinions. According to the opinion that we're saying that it was only the neshama was burnt, we don't need to say anything about these two threads. He doesn't necessarily have to say that it was in that way. Rashi on Posuk, in fact, kind of combines these two opinions together by saying that there were threads of fire that went into their nostrils and burnt them only on the inside. So in effect, Rashi is basically combining together the two opinions that we have over here in the Gemara. And the Orach HaNer, in fact, says that's not really such a question. Yeah, both the Tanna Kamma and Rabbi Elazar might agree that it both began with the two threads that divided into four, etc. Rabbi Elazar is just saying that it stopped there, and the Tanna Kamma is saying that it continued to burn their bodies as well. Tosfos, by the way, points out that afterwards, it says that Mishol and Al-Tzad, the Gemara elsewhere mentions that Mishol and Al-Tzafan, whom Moshe gave the job of taking the bodies out and burying them, they became Tomei from that. Now, if a Nodav and Avihu, according to the Tanna Kamma, Nodav and Avihu had been completely burnt, then they wouldn't become Tomei from that. You know, a person doesn't become Tomei from ashes of a mess. So Tosfos says, even according to that, you would have had to say that their skeletons, the basic form of their bodies, were still intact. You would have to say that they were burnt, but the ashes, where there was enough in there to constitute enough of a human skeleton where they would have become Tomei from that. So in short, two different opinions. According to the Tanna Kamma, it was Adas Korach that were burnt only on the inside, and Nadav and Avihu were completely burnt. And according to Rabbi Elazar, the other way around. Well, the Gemara says, V'hoksiv, doesn't the Pasuk say that the fire consumed them? Now, V'toichal oisam is a mute. So only them, but not something else. If everything is burnt, then where then what's it in my mind? And the answer is, oisam v'loy bigdehem. It means, according to that opinion, means that their bodies were burnt, but not their clothes. So one way or the other, their clothes remained intact, but the machlokas is whether their bodies were burnt as well. So Tosfos points out, well, I mean, the Pasuk anyway says that their clothes were not burnt. The Pasuk continues, Vayisoam that Mishol and Al-Safan took them and carried them in their ksoines. So that means their ksoines was still intact. Tosfos says no, because instead, b'chutanoisam could mean in Mishol and Al-Tzafan's ksoines. Maybe it means that they picked up the ashes using their own ksoines. They're Levium, not Kohenim. They're not wearing a ksoines as one of the big de kahuna, but a ksoines is a regular piece of clothing that other people wear as well. It's not the special one for Kohenim, but just a regular one. So it could mean that they lifted up the ashes in their own ksoines and took them to bury them. So you wouldn't have a proof from there that it means that Nadav and Avihu's ksoines remained intact. So therefore, we have to learn that from the word oisam. The Binyan Shloima points out. I mean, anyway. So how is Taka? How would the opinion? How Rebbe Elazar, who says that only their neshamas were burnt and their bodies were not, then what do we need oisam if their bodies remained intact? Of course, their clothing did too. So fine, an answer is given for that. An answer is given for that. That yeah, ultimately the Gemara is learning the whole point from the word oisam. And when we said before vayamusu, we're just learning from that it began with the two threads of fire, like we said before. Fine. So the Gemara says. So we have these two different opinions. So each one of them is saying that there was one case in the Torah of somebody who was burnt srefas neshama v'guf kayim, and they hold that we learn the gzeira shava from that. Now, why don't they learn from the one that according to their opinion was burnt completely? We'll get back to that soon. But first, the Gemara asks anyway, why are we learning from either Adas Korach or Bnei Aaron instead? V'nelach miporim anisrofim. Why don't we instead learn from the porim anisrofim? You have the par kohen, the par helam davashal tzibur, the par kohen gadol, one of the porim of Yom Kippur. All of those are taken outside the machna and actually burnt. And you would say, Malahalan Srefa Mamish, Afkan Srefa Mamish. So you would say over there it means actual burning. You actually burn the carcass of the animal. So maybe over here it would be the same thing that maybe over here it would be the same thing. That you burn that you that the person who gets Srefa is burnt completely. And then, in fact, then the Gzeira Shava Fakert would tell us not to learn from the one where it was only Srefas Neshama of a Guf Kayim, but rather to learn from the one that was completely burnt. So the answer is mistabra me odem havale lamelach. It's more logical to learn the concept of sreifa from something that involving people, either adas korach or bnei aron, as the case may be, chicane, because you have a number of considerations that make those more similar to the person who's chayiv sreifa. Odom, first of all, both of them involve a person, as opposed to the parim and israfim are animals. Choite, both of them committed a sin, whether we're talking about adas korach or nodav and avihu, did something wrong, and we can talk about the details, especially with nodav and avihu. There are many different opinions in Chazal what exactly they did wrong, but nonetheless, the fact is that they did obviously do something wrong, and adas korach as well, and the person who got sreifa, of course, whereas the animals for the korban themselves didn't do anything wrong. Also, neshama. Also, you can talk about taking away the neshama, which you don't really have by an animal. An animal has a nefesh; it doesn't have a neshama. Well, actually, never mind that. Actually, it actually points out the point is the animals, when you're burning them, have already been shechted. They're not being burnt alive over there. They've already been shechted, and their internal organs removed to be put on the mizbeach, etc. And all we're doing is taking the rest of the animal and going and burning it. So as opposed to with Adas Korach and Bnei Aaron and the person Chayev Srefa, the burning is what's killing them now. And number four, Pigul. And also that Pigul is not relevant to them. There's no such thing as a Pigul applies to Korbanos, as we'll learn in Masechta Zvachim, Be'ez Hashem. So therefore, it applies the Parim and Yisrofim. It's possible for there to be Pigul in them if when he shechted them or did one of the major avodas with them, he had in mind of certain kinds of wrong thoughts, Machsheves Hazman, as it calls it over there in Zvachim. Whereas by these three cases that we're talking about with Adas Korach and Bnei Aaron and the person chayiv sreifa, there's no such thing as pigul involved. So for those four reasons, it's logical to learn from there. Well, the Gemara asks, "Adrabim parim and israfim havalei lamelach." Can't you say on the contrary, maybe we should learn from the parim and israfim? Shekain, because we have two considerations against that. Machshir. First of all, in both of them, we're doing something to make to prepare to do the mitzvah of Hashem. By the Purim and Yisrofim, Hashem gave a mitzvah that after the korban is shechted and the blood sprinkled, etc., we should take out the animal and burn it. And here also, the Eibishter gives a mitzvah that certain people are chayav sreifa. In fact, the Rambam lists each of the four mitzvahs based din as a separate mitzvah saseh. This is these days in three prokim of Rambam and in Sefer HaMitzvahs that each of the mitzvahs based din is a separate mitzvah saseh of its own. So there's an actual mitzvah saseh to give sreifa, and there's an actual mitzvah to burn the Purim and Yisrofim, as opposed to Adas Korach and Bnei Aaron. There's no such mitzvah. And Lodurus, and another consideration is the Purim and Yisrofim is something for future generations as well. It's a mitzvah for future generations, and so is Sefer. Bnei Aaron and Adas Korach is not something for future generations. So therefore, so you have two reasons why to say that you should learn from Purim and Yisrofim and not from those. And the answer is Hanach Nefishon. True, but after all, you have more considerations on the one side than the other. We had four considerations why to learn from Adas Korach or Bnei Aaron, and only two to learn from Parman and Seraphim, and four is more than two. Tosfos points out there's another factor as well. You could also say, as we've been learning, we learned in the previous perek, and we're going to learn now as well, v'ahavta l'recha kamoicha applies when a person is being executed by Beis Din. And after all, the hot lead method is a lot more v'ahavta l'recha kamoicha than to actually burn them at the stake. So the Gemara could have pointed that out as well, but in any case, we're saying that we have four reasons against two. Okay, the Gemara says now. So we've established that we can't learn from Purim and Yisrofim according to any one of them. Fine, but the question still is, Mandi Yalef me Adas Korach, my time alo Yalef me Bnei Aaron. So the question is then, if we're the opinion, the Tanakhama, who says that we learn from Adas Korach, why indeed is he not learning from Bnei Aaron? According to him, Bnei Aaron were completely burnt up. So maybe we should say that that Sreifa does involve. We have a Gzeira Shava, after all, available. We have the word Sreifa that it mentions by Bnei Aaron. So maybe in fact it means that the. So maybe we should, and we learn and we have over there Ahu Sreifa Mamash Havoi. So Ahu Sreifa Mamash Havoi, and he holds that was actual burning. So Vnelef Mina. So why indeed, according to the Tanakhama, are we not learning from that that would be the method of that would be the method of Sreifa? And the answer is Omer Rav Nachman, Omer Rav Bavua, Omer Krov, V'ahavta L'Recha Kamoicha, because the Pasuk says, V'ahavta L'Recha Kamoicha, and as we learned in the previous parak, that applies more so when a person is being executed by Beis Din, Bror Lo Misa Yofa, find for him a nicer death, so as opposed to being completely burnt, is not Misa Yofa because it's harder on him, because it takes longer for the body to be burnt. As opposed to the hot lead is something fairly quickly. The same thing would be in reverse. The same question would be on Rebbe Lazar, why he's not learning from Adas Korach. We're according to him, Adas Korach were completely burnt, and again it's the same question and the same answer. So Marsha points out here the Gemara is asking it only on Rebbe Lazar, but really the question would be equally well on really the question would equally well be on Rebbe Lazar as well. Just it asks it only on one side. And then there is a different explanation. Rabbi Akiva Eger brings that actually no, the question is only on the Tanakhama, because because he's saying definitively by Bnei Aaron it was that they were actually completely burnt. Rabbi Lozo, who says that we learn from Bnei Aaron, we might say. It's not because we don't necessarily see clearly from the pasuk that they were completely burned. Rebbe Lazar is saying that by Bnei Korach we can't be sure. By Bnei Aaron he says we can be sure that their bodies remained intact. By Adas Korach we can't really say one way or the other. Maybe Menafshosam means that their neshamas were burned, but maybe it means like the drasha before that they became chayev because they sinned with their souls by getting involved with Korach through his food and drink. So therefore, says Rabbi Akiva Eger, that's why the Gemara is not asking Honorable Lazar. Anyway, well, the question is, v'chima achad de'ikad Rav Nachman. Well, if we have Rav Nachman's limud, that v'ahavta l'rech kamecha, gzera shava lamali, then why do we need the gzera shava in the first place? Yeah, we should say brer lo misa yofa, and misa yofa is going to be with the hot lead, so therefore, automatically, we would know that we don't need any gzera shava. And the answer is ilav gzera shava have amina sreifas neshama v'guf kaim lav sreifa hiklal. Because if it weren't for the if it weren't for the gzera shava, we wouldn't even say. We would say that sreifas neshama v'guf kaim, burning him only from the inside, is not considered burning at all. After all, the Torah is saying you have to have a punishment of burning. We would say that's not defined as burning b'chlal. So in other words, we would say fine. We would say it says it by Adas Korach or Bnei Aaron, but that's not. But after all, Loshen Bnei Adam is that Sreifa means actually burning. It's one thing when Hashem is punishing, but it's different. A Beis Din should have to punish with something that people will actually call Sreifa, like the Tzedukim said before. You're going to say the Ahavta L'Recha Kamoicha, and how you're going to fulfill that in that case. Which in fact, the Ran points out, look, if we were going to say that Sreifas Neshama is not burning at all, then obviously we'd have to use the Pasuk for something else. But the Gemara is just pointing out, listen, even according to that, you would have a way of being Mekayim V'ahavta L'Recha Kamoicha as well. You would say, Lapish Le'chaviz Chavilez Modus, what we should do is we should put lots and lots of branches, lots and lots of wood, ki hechid listruf ba'agal, so that he'll be burnt as quickly as possible. So you would have thought that without the Gzera Shava, that's what you do. So the only kind of valid Srefa is where the body is burnt, you would think, and then the V'ahavta L'Recha Kamoicha you can accomplish by making sure he gets burnt as fast as possible. Kamash Malan, that is why the Gzera Shava comes to tell us that no, Srefas Neshama V'guf Kayim is a valid method of Srefa, and once we know that, then V'ahavta L'Recha Kamoicha tells us that we should do that, and not that we should learn from any case where there's a different kind of Srefa. Now that we mentioned Nadav and Avihu, so let's talk about Taka. What brought about their punishment? The Gemara says, "Ukvar hoyu Moshe va'Aaron mahalchin baderech." It happened, in fact, once that Moshe and Aaron were walking on the road. The Nadav Avihu mahalchin achareihen, and Nadav and Avihu were following behind them because they were the two eldest sons of Aaron. So they're like they're second in command below Moshe and Aaron. V'chol Yisrael achareihen, and all the rest of the Jewish people were following them. Omer lo Nadav la'Avihu. So Nadav says to Avihu, "Ema say musu shnei zkenim halalu. When are these two old people going to pass away? And you and I will lead the generation." That sounds like a very, very chutzpahdik thing for them to say. Well, so there's an actual interesting explanation that what they meant by that. Obviously, they weren't going to speak in such a chutzpahdik way. What it meant is they're saying to themselves, "Listen, are we preparing ourselves properly? B'pashtus, when Moshe and Aaron pass away, we can expect that we're going to be the next manhigei hador. Are we really preparing ourselves for it appropriately?" Nevertheless, they shouldn't be talking in that way. They should be preparing themselves by all means, but they don't have to mention that point that the Rebbeim eventually are going to pass away. That was considered a degree of chutzpah, and therefore Hashem held it against them, and therefore the Gemara says it in this as if they had spoken in this very brazen way. So, Omer lahen HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so Hashem answers, Hanira mi koveres mi. You know what? You're thinking that you're going to outlive Moshe and Aaron. We're going to see who's going to bury who. You're going to see that you're not necessarily going to outlive them. Omer a papa. So the papa says, Hainu da amri inchi. This is like the expression people say, Nefishi gamli savi. There are many old camels, the ta'ini mashki da hoigni, who are carrying the skins of young camels. So in other words, we see sometimes you would expect the young camels are going to outlive the old ones, but sometimes, in fact, the young camels die or are killed first, and their skins end up being transported from place to place by older camels. So in the same way, Moshe and Aaron ended up outliving Nadav and Avihu, and they were the ones who oversaw their burial. What's this expression of Kvar Hoya Moshe and Aaron is an interesting one. Literally, it means, and already Moshe and Aaron were walking on the were walking on the road. So Marsha explains that listen, by both Adas Korach and Nadav and Avihu, what brought about their deaths was that they were bringing Keturis. But where they weren't supposed to. But by Bnei Aaron, you actually have several other reasons though, that the Gemara mentions in various places. One was that they had drunk wine, they had paskin halacha in front of Moshe, and for them, and therefore they were chayiv misa b'dei shamayim. So now, by Adas Korach, the Gemara has traced their downfall before to the fact that they got involved with Korach and that he was offering them food and drink, and they accepted that, and that brought them closer to him. The Gemara, by the way, in various places, the Gemara, by the way, in Sanhedrin mentions in the Gdoila Legima that giving somebody food and drink is a tremendous thing. It can bring people closer together. It can be a very good tool for Avas Yisrael. But here we're saying, on the other hand, it led them down the wrong path. So now we're saying, in other words, that there was a jealousy involved, and therefore they ended up getting punished. So here we're saying, now the Gemara is saying, well, kvar, and there was already such a case where there was also with Nadav and Avihu, where they're acting in a way as though they're jealous of Moshe and Aaron's greatness. And therefore, again, that's what led them down the wrong path, which wound up with their death. In fact, Maharshal says this is why. So we said before that there were two strings of fire that divided into four and two into each one's nostrils. So why did it start with two then? Why not just to begin with have four? The reason is the two represent that they were jealous of two people, Moshe and Aaron, but each one was jealous of both of them, and therefore it ended up dividing into four. But again, on another level, we can say it's not that they were actually jealous. It's that they at least on the surface they were saying we want to be prepared for when we're going to have to take them over. But nevertheless, it was a chutzpah to talk that way, and also maybe it showed that deep down there is a certain jealousy of Moshe and Aaron that they would even be thinking in those terms. And in any case, Marshall says that's the Ukvar. In other words, the Gemara is saying the same kind of thing as later on you had with Adas Korach. The same kind of character flaw is what ultimately led to Nadav and Avihu's deaths. The Gemara continues. Omer Rabbi Eliezer, to what can we compare a Talmud Chacham in the presence of an Am Haaretz? So, Ran, what does this have to do with anything? Rashi explains. We were talking before about Adas Korach. They were all Talmud Chachamim. These 250 people who gathered together with him and brought their Keturos. But we're saying that 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 we're saying that 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 that. That Korach invited them to his Sudas, and therefore they ended up being on his side, which means, in other words, because they didn't act in the way that respectable Talmid Chachamim should act. So therefore it caused, in other words, he started thinking less of them and started thinking, you know what, I can talk them into my schemes. So that would be what the Gemara is going to bring over here, that a Talmid Chacham has to be careful to maintain his dignity in the presence of an Am Haaretz, and not to compromise it, because then the Amoret is going to think less of him than he did before, as we see that here. Korach thought that these people are people that he can talk into, that he can talk into his schemes. So originally, a Talmid Chacham in the presence of an Amoret is like a golden pitcher. Like the Amoret feels, this Talmid Chacham is completely beyond my level. Nana mimenu, then if the Talmid Chacham, sorry, Sipper himenu, if the Talmid Chacham then converses in Divrei Chulin with the Amoret, so he just starts talking stam mundane talk with him, Doimel Kitin Shol Kesef, then he feels that he becomes downgraded in the eyes of the Amoret, and the Amoret thinks of him now as a silver pitcher. Nana mimenu, if he actually has hanah from him, he accepts food and drink or things like that from the Amoret, then he goes down even further in the Amoret's estimation. The Amoret now thinks of him, so, oh, this Talmid Chacham is just another person like anybody else, and I'm in a way greater than him. Then the Talmid Chacham becomes in his eyes like an earthenware jug, where once it breaks, there's no fixing it, meaning, in other words, that now the Amoret has this mentality that the Talmid Chacham is nothing special, and there's really no way of regaining that that greatness that he had in the eyes of the Amoretz beforehand. Marshaw explains the gold represents the Torah, the silver represents the Chochmah. So he still feels that the Talmid Chacham has Chochmah. But then when Nan Mimenu, in effect, then he accepted Shoichad from the Amoretz. So now he becomes like a Kitten Shocheres, where now what happens later on, the Samaritz is going to come, for example, to a Din Torah in front of the Talmid Chacham, and the Talmid Chacham is going to be biased in his favor because of the Hanah he received from him, and therefore we're comparing it to an irreparably broken Kli Cheres. So in other words, the point is, again, that's what happened with Hadas Korach, that they were Talmid Chachamim, they were high-level Talmid Chachamim, but they shouldn't have accepted that food and drink and wining and dining from Korach, and they did, and that's what eventually led to their downfall. Then Yehoyada points out in it. First of all, we're comparing them to a pitcher of water because you drink water from it, which Torah is compared to water. The word kitter, and he says, is Osius Tikkun. The Talmid Chacham is the Tikkun of the world because he keeps the world running. But then again, he starts going down in the Amoritz's estimation. Okay, getting back now to the matter of Sreifa. So the Gemara says, Imauta Bastli, a woman by the name of Imauta Bastli, Bas Koyin Shazin Sahavoy, she was a Bas Koyin who had been Mizana. Akfa Rav Choma Bar Tovia, Chavila Ismuris Vesurfa. Rav Choma Bar Tovia had her surrounded with bundles of branches, Vesurfa, and he had her burnt at the stake. Rav Yosef Ta Batauti. So Rav Yosef points out, Rav Choma had made two big mistakes in that. First of all, Tawbid Rav Masna. First of all, he was mistaken because Rav Masna had explained that Amar Aleph, that we learned from the Psukim as we just went through the whole Sugya over here, that you burn that even a person who's Chayiv Sreifa, you burn them as Rav Masna had said right after the Mishnah, Psila Shal Aver, that it means a long, skinny strip of lead. So if anything, Rav Choma Bar Tovia should have done that rather than having her burnt with bundles of branches. So that was his first mistake. Why are we mentioning that he made now? In fact, Tosfos points out, what about we have Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Tzadik in the Mishnah? The answer is, after the Chachamim pointed out to him that Beis Din were Tzadukim, then Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Tzadik changed his mind as well, and therefore then he agreed with the Chachamim that the proper method of Sreifa is with the hot lead, which is why, that's also why the Gemara is, that's also that, so that's also the, that's also a reason Why the Gemara is saying that he made a mistake on Rav Masna. Why not say that he made a mistake? He didn't know the Mishnah. It's because the Mishnah, you have the opinion of Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Tzadik. So sort of Choma could have said that he's following that. But now when Rav Masna says clearly straight out that it has to be Psila Shel Aver, and Rav Choma didn't do that, then that was a mistake on his part. In fact, actually, that's the Ran says that. The Yad Ramah actually has a girsa in the Gemara on Amud Aleph that Ramasin did not only say Psila Shel Aver, that he was the one who brought the Gzeira Shava. So then, in that case, he did so Rav Chama did not know this whole limud of Ramasin's, this whole Gzeira Shava that we learned from. So that was his first mistake. And also v'tanya. Furthermore, he made a mistake regarding this that we learned in a Braisa, when the Pasuk says, Uvaso ala koinam, you should come to the Kohanim, the Levim, and to the judge of the meaning the Rosh based in the Nasi of the Sanhedrin, who is at that time, from which we learn why does it mention a Kohanim and Levim? It's good to have Kohanim and Levim in the Sanhedrin, but it's not required. And here the Pasuk is making it sound like you have to go to the Kohanim. So we learn from that, Bizman Yesh Kohen, Yesh Mishpat, only when there are Kohanim serving in the Beis Hamikdash, and the Lishkas and then the Sanhedrin is there in the Lishkas HaGozis on site in the Beis Hamikdash, Yesh Mishpat, only then is there judgment of Dinin HaFoshes, Bizman Ein Kohen, Ein Mishpat. When there's no Kohen nearby during the Avodah, when the Sanhedrin is not in the Lishkas HaGozis, then there's no Mishpat. And Rav Chama Bar Tovia lived long after the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed. So therefore, he had no business doing the punishment of Sreifa, doing the punishment of Sreifa at all. Now we did talk about before earlier in our Masechta, there can be rare situations where Beis Din, even in later times, has the ability to do dinei nefashos, but they wouldn't necessarily have the ability to do all four dinei mamon, or to do all four types. At most, maybe they could do whatever they could maybe do hereg particularly, but not necessarily all the other ones. And in any case, it has to be under the authority of the local government that basically is telling them you have to do that. And here you didn't have that, so therefore, sort of Yosef is saying Rav Chama shouldn't have done this. Elsewhere, by the way, the Gemara mentions that a tzaddik, Hashem won't cause a takola to happen through him, something that went wrong. And Tosfos points out in a number of places, we do see cases where Chachamim did something wrong, one of them being our example. So one answer in Tosfos is that particularly Hashem protects tzaddikim from things that involve where they would eat something which is not kosher, because it would be a gnai for them that their body is now going to be made up of something that's not kosher. But other kinds of mistakes, it's possible for a Talmud Chacham to do, and here Rav Chama Bar Tovia made two mistakes. As Rabbi Yosef is saying. Okay, we said in the Mishnah, Amar Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Tzadik Maisa Bas Koyin Shezin Simchula, it happened that a Bas Koyin was Mizana, and they burnt her with branches, burning her body, and the Chachamim said, so on the face of it, doesn't that mean that's the right way? And the Chachamim tell him the Beis Din of that time was not Bucky. So what do we mean, not Bucky? I'm going to be a Beis Din Shel Tzedukim, however. It was a Beis Din of Tzedukim, and they don't hold of all these Lamudim that we learned on Amud Aleph. So they just take things at face value. And if the Torah says burning, then they assume it just meant what we think of as burning. Well, the Gemara asks, you're telling me that the conversation between Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Tzadik and the Chachamim went the way we said in the Mishnah, that he mentioned this point to them about that they burnt this woman at the stake, and the Chachamim answered it was a Beis Din of Tzedukim. We learned in a Braisa that there was a, that the conversation went in a different way. Omer Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Tzadik, Zuchurani, I remember, Kshayisi Tinek Umurkavak Sefer Shel Abba, when I was a young boy still being carried on my father's shoulders, v'heviu bas koyin shezinsa, they brought a bas koyin who had been mezana, v'kifur chavilez modus, and they surrounded her with bundles of branches, usrafuha, and they burnt her. And instead of answering him that it was a Beis Din of Sukkim, the Chum answered him, omrulo, they answered him, kotna yusa. Look, by your own statement, you were a cotton at that time, v'ein mevin rayim in a cotton, you can't bring a proof from a cotton, meaning, in other words, we cannot accept your edus that that happened. So part of it, I mean, the Chamer of Achaya points out, part of what they can tell him is you're cotton, and therefore you would have had no way of knowing whether it was a legitimate Beis Din or not. But in any case, the fact is that in the Mishnah, they're telling him it was a Beis Din of Tzedukim, and here they're saying you were cotton. So the answer is Shnei Maisim Hoyu Havu. The answer is there were two different cases. One, there were two different cases where Bas Koyen was burnt at the stake, and Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Tzadik pointed those both out to the Chachamim. And one of them, they told him, "Look, you were a cotton," and the other one, they're telling him it was a Beis Din of Tzedukim. Well, the question is, hey, omalahu bereisha. Well, which case did Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Tzadik tell him about them? Tell about first. Ilema hokamaisa omalahu bereisha. Did he tell them first the one in our Mishnah? And they told him it's a base in Tzedukin. And then he's saying the one in the Braisa when I was a little kid. Well, why? He told them something which evidently he was older and they didn't pay attention to him because they told him it was a basis in the Tzedukim and you can't learn anything from it. And then why would he even bother asking them about the one when he was a cotton that they should pay any attention to his thing? They should just answer him the same thing. It was a basis in Shul Tzedukim. And why would he even ask in the first place? Ella, we have to explain. What happened was the one from the Braisa, he told them first. So first he told them when I was a little boy, then this kind of case happened. But almost like cotton, are you saying? They said at that point you were cotton, and therefore we can't really bring any proof from what you say anyway. Then he says to them, true God. He says, yes, but there was another case after I was already by mitzvah. But and then they answered him in the Mishnah, because the basin of that time was not Baki, they would stuck him and they didn't pay attention to Torah Shabbal Peh. So that was how it was. Doris sort of shown him points out that we find Rabbi Elazar ben Tzaddik living many decades later. We find him, he was one of the elder Talmid Chachamim in the times of Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. So he explains that actually that's what happened, is now many years later, this is, we're talking 60, 70 years after the Churban, the Chachamim are getting together and discussing Torah, and Rabbi Elazar ben Tzaddik tells them, I remember from even before the second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, these incidents, and again, the first one was when he was a little boy, and the second one was after he was bar mitzvah, and the Chacham answered him as they're answering him over here. Okay, so that takes care of Sreifa. Next, the Mishnah continues, Mitzvah Sanehrogin, how do they do the Mitzvah of Hereg? They would chop off his head with sword the way that the Goyish governments Lahavdil do. So very simple beheading. Rabbi Yehuda Oymer Nivul Uloi. Rabbi Yehuda says that would be a degrading way of killing him. As the Gemara is going to explain what would be, the degradation, Rashi says, at this point, we assume it means because he's standing up, and then they chop off his head, and he falls over, and it sounds like Rabbi Yehuda is saying that would be a degrading way to kill him. Rabbi Yehuda says, Manichan Esrosha ala Sadan, what we do is we place his head on a chopping block, and then we chop off his head using a cleaver, a very large knife, a very, very large butcher knife. Chum answered him, "Ein misim nuvelas mizu." There's no greater nivul than that. That you're treating him basically like an animal. So therefore, the Chum say, "No. If you want to have not nivul, then you can't do it this way." Now, the Gemara is going to explain that actually Rabbi Yehuda had a different meaning when he said Nivul Huzeh, and we're going to discuss what they meant by that. So the Gemara says, Tanya, Omer Lahen Rabbi Yehuda L'Chachamim. So Rabbi Yehuda says to the Chacham, Afani Yedea Shemisa Minuvelasi. I agree, the way that I'm suggesting involving the chopping block and the cleaver is a Misa Minuvelas, because basically you're treating him almost as if he was an animal. Aval Ma'esa, but what can I do? It has to be that way. Sharei Omer Toto V'chukaseyim Lo Yiselechu. After all, the Torah says you're not allowed to follow in the ways of the Goyim, and for us to chop off the head the way that the government does, where he's standing there and then they chop his head off with a sword, is copying the Goyim. So therefore he says, so again, according to Rashi, the Gemara assumed to begin with, the Chachamim assumed that he meant it's Nivul because he's standing up and then falling over, and Rabbi Yehuda is explaining that, no, my problem is that you were copying the Goyim, it's Nivul because we're copying the Goyim. According to Tosfos, to begin with, that was what Rabbi Yehuda meant, all along. The Rabbanan, and the Rabbanan answer back to that. They say, no, kibin dechtiv saif baraisa. Since the Torah tells us that you have to kill him with a sword, and we know that because the Pasuk says, by an irani dachas, it says clearly that you kill them lafi chorev, with the edge of the sword. So therefore, loy minayo kagaminan, so we're not learning from them. So you can't say when we're beheading a person with a sword, then we're copying the goyim. No, the Torah itself tells us what to do. And the Torah itself tells us what to do, and therefore it's fine to use a sword. So the Yad Ramah explains, the Chacham say, it's true, we agree that you could equally well use a cleaver, a koifet, instead of a sword. However, since the Torah says, again, then they say you can't, it has to be using a sword where they can behead him quickly, as opposed to in the degrading way that Rabbi Yehuda said. And the Chacham continue. De'ilai teimahochi. If you're not going to tell, if you're going to tell me otherwise, if you're going to tell me every time that the goyim do something, then automatically that kind of thing is off limits to us as Jews. Ela hodatanya, the de'ilai teimahochi, hodatanya. What about what are you going to do with this that it says in a brisa? Sofren alamalochim v'loy midavchei ha'emodi. We burn when a king dies. We burn his bed and his personal effects and things like that. And it's not considered davchei ha'emodi. It's not considered the ways of the superstitious ways of the goyim. Even though that's their minhag as well. So we see that not everything that the goyim do is something automatically off limits. So heichi sarfin, and you would have to ask, how could we burn? Don't we have the same problem? We can't follow in the ways of the goyim. Ella kiven dechtiv sreifa baraisa. Since the Torah mentions this kind of burning in the Torah, not really in Torah, it's a pasuk in Nevi'im, but still it mentions that it was done. Dechtiv, where Yirmiyahu tells Tzidkiyahu that he's telling Tzidkiyahu, you better surrender to Nebuchadnezzar, because otherwise your Shalayim is going to be destroyed and you're going to be taken prisoner and taken into Golos. But one way or the other, Yirmiyahu tells him, one way or the other, Nebuchadnezzar, even if you don't listen to me, Nebuchadnezzar is not going to kill you. You're going to end up, you'll end up dying peacefully over Mr. Faisabesech of a Gomer. They'll do a burning for you like they did for your ancestors, the previous kings. So in other words, you'll still have the covet of a king. In fact, in the end, actually, Tzidkiyahu just barely outlived Nebuchadnezzar. He lived long enough to see Nebuchadnezzar drop dead and be humiliated by having his body dragged all around the city. So everybody was sure he's really dead. And then Tzidkiyahu passed away shortly after that. And yeah, they honored him with a royal burial. So we see that Yirmiyahu is telling Tzidkiyahu they're going to do that. And therefore, lav minayu kogamrinan. So therefore, we're not learning. So even though it's true that the goyim do that kind of thing as well, that's not called a chokeseim loyselechu. But hochanami, so the same way over here, kim dechtiv saif baraisa, since the Torah says to use a sword, lav minayu kogamrinan, then we're not learning from the goyim, and we're allowed to do that. So don't call it a gnai, Rabbi Yehuda. Don't call it nivul huloy, because we're following in the ways of the goyim. This is not considered following in the ways of the goyim. Bechlal, you have the whole matter of chokaseim lo selechu. The post can talk about the exact parameters of it. I mean, even if it doesn't say in the Torah, you know, the goyim wear pants. We wear pants. That's obviously not that's obviously not a chokaseim lo selechu. So the post can talk about that. Basically, when one thing is when you have the goyish and minag is based on avodah zara or based on superstition or then there's no logical reason for it, then we can say that it would be an issur of chokaseim lo selechu. But if there's a logical reason behind it, then not necessarily. One example the poskim give, for example, is doctors' uniforms. There's a standard uniform that doctors wear in the goyish world. A Jewish doctor is allowed to wear it as well because there's a logical reason. This way, people know that he's a doctor. And nowadays, the scrubs that they wear are practical also when they're in the operating room. And whatever. So the Gemara says, "V'hodetnan be'idach pirkin." Now, in the next perek, we're going to learn Eloheinan ne'erogin. The following people are getting hereg. Haritzeach va'anshe irani dachas. So there are two people who get hereg: a murderer and the people of an irani dachas. So we have to figure out b'shlema irani dachas k'sibuhu l'fi chareb. By the irani dachas, it clearly says they're killed with the edge of the sword. So therefore, it's clear that we have to chop off their heads. Ela ritzeach menola. And how do we know b'chlal in the first place that a ritzeach gets hereg? And the answer is Tanya. We learn in a brisa, you have like this. The Pasuk describes in Parashas Mishpatim a case where a person kills his Eved Knani. And the Pasuk says, Noker ni nokem, he will be avenged. So what does that mean? Nekimazu any adam mahu. What do you mean he'll be avenged? When you have a pasuk in the Torah in Parshas Bechukosai that says, "I'll bring you against you a sword which brings the revenge for the vengeance of the covenant," meaning the Jewish people disobeyed the covenant that Hashem made with them, and therefore Hashem is going to bring goyim with swords against them. So, and he uses the same word nekemes, nekimazu saif. So we see that nokim yinokim refers to being killed by a sword. And therefore, and once we see that by a person who kills an Eved Knani, then it's the same thing when he kills a regular Yid as well. Well, the Gemara asks, still, there's many ways of killing with a sword. Ve'ema de boris le mivraz, maybe it means he stabs him with a sword. And the answer is lafi cherev, if it says by the edge of the sword. So therefore, it has to mean they use the edge, not the point of it. Different gersois and different explanations over here among other things. So the Rashi mentions the point that we know that a sword can have cheref pifias biyadim. A sword is double edged. So if you're using the point of it, then you're using both edges, and it has to be only one. So the question is the aim of Gisra. Okay, but how do you know it means that you chop off his head? Maybe it means that you cut him in half. And again, the answer is Amar Nachman, Amar Akra. Tells us it has to be the nicest possible death. So therefore, so it can't be cutting him in half along his full length. Okay, the Gemara says Ashkechon de Kotel Avda. Fine, that tells us that a person is chayev misas hereg by being beheaded when he killed an eved. Bar Choren Manolon. How do we know the same thing applies if he killed a regular freed? In fact, actually, the question is because by Eretzeach it says Mois Yumas. It just says Mois Yumas, and usually by when it says Misa without saying a type, then usually it means Chenek. So maybe it means a person kills somebody else, then he's chayev Chenek. The answer is v'lav kavachomer. Who can't you make a kavachomer? Kotel avda b'sayif v'achorin b'chenek. If you're telling me if he kills an eved, he's going to be chayev misa sayif. You're telling me that if he kills a ben chorin, a regular free yid, then he should get a lesser punishment of chenek. Can't be. So therefore, logically, it has to be sayif for both of them. Well, of course, the question is then hanichal mandom chenek kal. That works according to the chachamim that chenek is less stringent. El mandom chenek chomu ma'ikal meimer. What about according to the b'shimon who says that chenek is stronger than hereg? So maybe according to him, Taka, a regular Ritzeach should get Chenek. So we would say he kills an Eved, he gets the lesser punishment of Hereg. And if he kills a Ben Chorin, he gets the greater punishment of Chenek. How do we know that not? So the answer is Nafkalei Mitzanya. Reb Shimon is going to learn rather that you give Hereg to a person who killed from the following Braisa. The Pasuk says, by the Egla Arufa, Va'ata Tavar Hadom Hanoki Mikirbecha. The Pasuk says that you kill the Egla Arufa in the valley over there, and then and you will destroy the guilt for innocent blood from among you. Meaning, in other words, that in context, the pasuk means Rashi mentioned that even after the Egla Arufa, if Edim come forward and identify that it's Seach, then he still gets put to death. You're not going to say the Egla Arufa took care of the whole Avera, and now the guy's potter from Misa. But here, the Gemara is saying Hukshu kol shefri damim la Egla Arufa. Means we have a hekish between anybody who kills Adom Anoki. He spilled innocent blood with the Egla Arufa. Malahalan Basayef, we may not saver. Now, how is the Egla Arufa killed? Is its head is chopped off with a sword in its neck. Because that's what Arifa means. It means to chop off its head. Afkan Basayef, we may not saver. The same way over here, it has to mean with a sword and from the neck. So even Reb Shimon is going to agree that even though Saif is stronger than Hereg, that's how it is. Everybody is getting, even though he says Saif is weaker than Hereg, nevertheless, the same thing applies to killing an Eved Knani and killing a Ben Chorin, they're both getting Saif. Well, the Gemara asks, by the Egla Arufa, we don't use a sword. E malahalan bekoifetz umimul orif. Well, there we are using a cleaver, and we're chopping the animal's head off from the back of the neck. Afkan bekoifetz umimul orif. Maybe here it should be the same thing as well. Now Rabbi Yehuda had mentioned in the Mishnah using a koifitz because he was bothered by the question that we'd be following the goyim. The Tanakhama had said that that it's not considered following the goyim, and according to them, we are using a sword. So why? And when the sword is being done, it's done similar to shchita in that it's being done from the front of the neck. So why not literally, because you're not doing a back and forth motion, you're doing one blow, but still, why don't we say it should be exactly the same as the Egla Arufa in that? And again, Omer Rav Nachman, Omer Rav Avor, Omer Krov, Ahavta L'Reach Kamecha, Brur L'Misa Yafa. Again, you have to choose for him within the parameters that the Torah says, the nicest possible death, and therefore that means that the nicer way of doing it, the faster and the faster and nicer way of doing it is using a sword and using from the front of the neck, and therefore to that extent we don't learn from the Egla Arufa. So it's clear that that's how a Ritzeach is killed, the same way as the Irani Dachas, Lofi Chorev, by the edge of the sword and not using the point of it and not cutting him in half and not anything like that.